Hi, I'm Kiki.
And I'm Kemi.
And you're listening to
Your Advisors Will See You Now, a podcast that will help you to figure out all of your options for life after high school. Hi, everyone, and thank you for tuning into Your Advisors Will See You Now. In this episode, we will be interviewing college accessibility expert Dan Jordan. So this is the perfect episode if you are a parent or a student with a learning disability and you have questions about transitioning from high school to college. Without further ado, Jordan, will you please introduce yourself, your title, and how you became a college accessibility expert?
Well, my name is Dan Jordan. I am an assistant director of counseling services at an Eastern university. It's a small university. And I got into accessibility. It was my first foray into college. I got a job at the same school, and half that job was to do accessibility. So that learning curve, I had like very little experience with disability. I had it in the community setting with people that were severely mentally ill, so I had that experience, but I didn't have an awful lot in the college arena. And that learning curve was very steep. And right around the same time, my son was diagnosed with dyslexia, dysgraphia, and dyscalculia. So I had to walk that whole journey that I'm still walking with him. He's now in college, so I still have to walk that walk. And saw a whole bunch of different things for students with learning disabilities, especially, that were discrepancies that I can easily clean up. And those discrepancies have just been very persistent, let's say. So nobody's read their eval, nobody knows what their disability is called. Those types of things are really common issues, and it's a hard thing to get a student with a learning disability to tell anything about their disability in a way that is meaningful for the interview for accommodations and those types of things. So I saw an awful lot of those types of things. And so I wanted to make sure that that didn't happen to my son. So as much as I was walking two lines at the same time. I was walking the IEP, IDEA line, and I was also walking the accessibility line at the same time. So that's just a little bit where I come from. I did that for about 10 and a half years, and then they restructured some stuff, and I just stayed in counseling.
Very cool. I think we have some questions that we're going to ask you that we've already provided you, but I have some rogue questions later just based on what you share about your background and you having a son with a learning disability. Yeah. I'll ask those later though, but we'll stick to the script for now.
That's okay. So, you can go off script. It's totally fine.
Okay, cool. We usually do, but
yeah, go for it.
So can you just share? So you talked about your experience with your son. So if you don't mind sharing, what were some of the things that you notice, or if your son shared something with you all, and how were you able to support him through that process of getting him those accommodations, the proper accommodations?
Yeah, there's a trial and error early on. So we had to figure out some of the things. We knew with dyslexia, he had to do a very multi-sensory type of program, either an Orton-Gilliam or a Wilson program, those types of things for that, just for the reading component, because dyslexia is its own thing. It runs in families, and as soon as he was diagnosed, my siblings were saying, yeah, I kind of have some of that. And my mom's like, yeah, I definitely have some of that. So we were noticing the generational impact that was having. And that took the edge off of him just in terms of the self-esteem, because he's seeing his grandmother and his uncles and that kind of thing. He's seeing them say the same stuff. And he's like, oh, well, so it's kind of normal. So we wanted to normalize that too. And so we looked at what was working for him, and that was a whole process. It's still a process. It's never going to stop being a process. So what we tried as parents was to look for where he's having difficulty and then help him try and problem solve what would work. So, for example, early on, he was doing the Wilson program, and he was having trouble doing a paragraph for school. This is really early on. And we said, okay, that's fine. Why don't you take a break, have a snack, and come back to it. He was still upset. And we said, why don't we type it for you? instead of you doing it, instead of you doing all that work, why don't we type it for you? And so he's saying these things, and it comes out as a perfect paragraph out of his mouth just by saying it. And so we were like, oh, wait a second. So I'm hearing this. My wife is like, hey, this is what just happened. I'm like, you know what? We have speech-to-text programs. Like, he can use that. We can teach him how to use that. And that went back to the school. It was sort of that trial and error. And interestingly enough, I just did that like a couple of days ago with him as well. And he's a college freshman. So, and he's saying, hey, I have this review that happens in class. And I'm like, well, you have a great comprehension. Verbal comprehension is one of your strengths. Why don't you ask to record the lecture? He's like, I didn't even think about that. Mm-hmm. He's like, well, maybe I'll ask that for the accessibility person next semester. I'm like, no. You can ask that right now. Like, mm-hmm. that can happen mm-hmm. like right now. You don't have to wait for anything. You can ask your instructor. You can do that, but you're the one who has to do it. So it was kind of like we do together a little bit. It's like I'll do some of the advocacy for you at first, and then it was sort of like that example of speech text. It's like we do, and then he had to implement that himself. Mm-hmm. So we showed him, and he had to do that and walk that walk, and he found a couple of programs that really work for him. He loves anything to do with Apple and Mac. He finds those programs to be really useful for him. But we had to walk that walk with him to problem solve those types of things so that he could get to advocate for himself, so he knew what worked and what didn't. And if it's not working, hey, what could work? Like, you know, tape recording a lecture is not that big of a deal. It's an easy thing to do, but he's the one who has to ask for that.
Right.
I hope that answered the question.
Yeah, that was perfect. No, thank you.
Yeah, I think a key thing that you mentioned too, that even when I noticed with some students, which is a little different, is from high school versus college, is that advocacy part, right? And I think advocacy too, in terms of accessibility and just everything all in terms of college, is a lot of self-advocacy in terms of if you want to get, like you said before, different technology, or even for students that are just trying to get more help in their courses. So there's a lot of different components mm-hmm. of advocacy in so many different places, which I think is just correct. Overall a big transition from high school to college. I guess something that I would want to build off of that question of the resources are what type of resources are there available in different colleges? I know some colleges can provide different things. Like you were saying before, maybe they could request for someone to record the lecture or for a student to write the notes for them. What are some different kind of accommodations that you know of that institutions can provide?
See, that's a really interesting question. And it's easy for me to answer now because I don't have any legal responsibility to like cover my butt. So accessibility people will probably tell you, I don't know you, I don't know the paperwork, so I really can't tell you what you're going to need, and I can't tell you what accommodations you're going to need, so that's probably what staff will go ahead and say. I wouldn't advise a parent to ask that question or a student to ask that question to accessibility staff, because you're not going to get an answer that's going to be something that's fruitful and important information. You're not going to get some information. It's going to be a little frustrating. You can say, hey, my son has this on his IEP, or my daughter has this on her IEP. Is that something that's possible here? And if there's any discrepancies, you know, how do we work that out? That's probably a better question. Mm-hmm. With me, I could say it's pretty much anything. Anything that allows for access. And the good thing is, colleges are not bound by what's written on the assessment. They're not bound by what's written on the IEP. IEPs and 504 plans end at graduation from high school. So college is not bound by that. They're under a completely different section of 504. ADA applies, but it's a totally different section. It's Title 2 and 3, I think. Don't quote me on that. But it's different titles. So colleges can often do more if, in fact, there's something more that needs to be done. And so in the realm of accommodations, it can be anything from time and a half for tests or extended time for tests, distraction reduction. So for my son, he has speech to text, text to speech. he gets extended time for tests. He gets breaks as well. So it's like kind of like stop the clock, and then you can take a break every now and then, those types of things. So it's really personalized. So when students self-advocate and they self-disclose that they have that to the accessibility office, there's a lot of information that they get to provide, and they also tell their personal story. So if there's something that they need, it'll come out in that interview. And the accessibility staff will say, we have some things here for you that you might not have thought of, that high schools probably just didn't do. They may not have done stop the clock. They may not have done things like, hey, you're only taking two tests on a day, and we're going to separate that by a good solid hour. That's probably not something that was done intentionally and on purpose. But that is something that can be done in a college setting if, in fact, that student needs it. So anything that's necessary for access, that's exactly what's going to happen. And that's where it stops. So it doesn't supply anything. Accommodations are not modifications. So there's limitations. So you can't modify the tests to have certain questions or only have certain questions. I don't do essay questions. That's not going to be something that's going to be altered. So there are limitations for that. So accommodations also can't be personal services. And you can't fundamentally alter the nature of a particular class. So if it allows for access, that's one thing, but there's limitations on what you can do. And there's also things that are written in the IEPs that are like more success-oriented strategies that are most likely not going to be transferable or something that's going to be an accommodation at high school or in college, sorry. In high school, fine. You can have somebody help you with like a writing assignment, let's say, or there's a resource person to help you with that writing assignment, or a teacher's going to break that down into sections and help you break that down and that kind of stuff. That's not going to happen. Review guides for tests or study guides. That's called a syllabus. That's what that's called. So you're not going to get that in college because there is that sense that, hey, you're an adult, you can walk this walk, you can do these certain things, but as a person with a disability, you're going to need access. And once you have that, then you have a level playing field. And that's where the line stops. But it doesn't mean we can't do more. We can. Because if there's something we see that you need for access that wasn't done before, that's the beauty of having that individualized process for each person. Now, that's just the accommodations piece. The resources are available to everyone. And those resources can be tutoring, the Academic Resource Center, office hours, your counseling services, your health and wellness center. Those types of things can also be resources to help with the college experience. So, but there might be limitations to that. So if students are thinking about which college might be helpful for them, well, you have to not just look at financial aid, which is a huge piece, and that's the piece that almost takes on the most precedent for most people. But if you're a student with a disability, I kind of put the disability on top. I kind of put it there. And that gets missed when you do a college tour. You're looking at, you know, do I fit in? Do I like the campus? Are the people nice? Those are great things. Don't get me wrong. I've never been on a college tour and people have been rude. It's just not happened. So yeah. We don't really have to look at that. We have to look at what resources are meaningful for that student. And some students need, let's say, words are hard today. I have no idea why. Words are just
Saturday.
Hard today.
Okay.
But they have academic coaching. And so they have somebody that's there to help walk them through like time management, breaking down assignments, those types of things. Those more success-oriented types of things that might have been in an IEP, let's say. Well, a student has to seek that out. Not every college is going to have an academic coach assigned to an academic resource center type of thing. And so if a student responds really well to that type of accountability and that type of interaction, you might want to choose a school that has that. But there might be limitations. It might be a group kind of coaching situation, much like tutoring. Tutoring might be in a small group, not one-on-one. It's not going to be by somebody who's a learning specialist. It's going to be by somebody who's another student that might be a little bit more advanced in the classwork and coursework for that. So parents have to be aware of that. Students have to be aware of that. But they have to look at the services that are offered in a way that, how do I fit into this? How do my needs get met by these services? And so if there are limitations, does that really jive with what you need? And is that okay for you moving forward? Are you okay with that? And if you run into a problem, how do you navigate that with the resources that you have? So it's not a linear process. It's not something, there's a lot of moving parts to that, but the resources are there to help every single student, and that's not really an accommodation. Those are just services that automatically happen.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You said that really, really well too, because I mean, I think Kemi and I, our biggest thing is always do your research. So I was just thinking about, you mentioned like a college tour. Research doesn't stop at a tour. You know, I think most people get to the tour, they finish, like serve them lunch, and then you go to the next college maybe. But I think the important piece would be, you're able to go talk to offices. If you're a prospective student, you know, why not go talk to financial aid one-on-one, talk to disability services one-on-one, talk to academic advising. Because I think students too, like, I know back in my college search, I wouldn't know what to ask, but I think that was really helpful what you said. Just go and seek out, what do you all offer? And that's really good, because I just think people don't think about that. You know, they want to see the campus. They want to see the facilities, not necessarily talk about what can be available to them. So I'm glad you went into detail about that. That's very helpful.
Yeah,
I was going to ask.
Another aspect to that is, you can actually set appointments with those offices to talk to those people if you have questions for that. And just simple question, like, how do I access you? What are the limitations? What kind of services do you offer here? If I had an issue, like, are there limits to those types of things? Basic questions about who, what, when, where, how, why, that kind of stuff always fits. And you can always set those appointments up ahead of time if you're going to go and visit your school counselor, the person that you're working with, your admissions counselor, can help with navigating all of that and set all of that stuff up way ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to meet those people. And if we're talking about accessibility, you get to meet the people way ahead of time. So you know what they're like. You know how they interact with students. They know how they're going to interact with you. They're not just necessarily putting their best foot forward for you, but they're going to be able to give you an introduction to what they're all about.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely important. I like that a lot. It's giving me ideas about something. But I was going to ask as well, you've mentioned if a student has a disability, mentioned the interview process. That's where the counselor figures out what accommodations the student is going to need. Can you talk about the prep process for that? So what happens before they interview, what they need to be doing? I know that's a broad question. It's different for each college, but generally.
Yeah, it's roughly the same process with every school, unless it's really an online school. Like University of Phoenix sometimes has an online BA. Might be a little bit of a different process for that, but the basics are going to remain the same. So the process, really, once you've chosen a school or schools that you feel might fit for you, you've done all the prep work, you've done all the looking at services, and you said, nope, school 1, 2, and 3, those are ones that might fit best for me. Great. As soon as you're accepted, most likely, and this could be a question that you ask when you do the tour, or you look at the online information too, and when can I apply? How do I apply? All of that prep work comes way ahead of time. So once you choose the school, most likely to get accepted. I can't speak for every school, so there might be some aberrations with that, but typically it's after you're accepted, you can apply for accommodations and move through that interactive process with the accessibility staff. Process is, you can send an email and say, hey, this is what it is. Look online and they'll explain the process. It's all on the webpage. And if you don't know how to find the webpage, the admissions counselor that you worked with probably send you the link. And if you haven't asked to look for that information or see those individuals or the office on the college tour, looking for that information online is going to help you out because it will outline exactly what steps to take. Typically, those steps are fill out a form. That's demographic information, what major you're going to be in, simple requests of what accommodations are you requesting, and any other information that might be necessary. So each form is going to be a little bit different in terms of what they want, but there's usually a form. Documentation, it can be an issue, but there's documentation for each disability. So if we're talking learning disabilities, that's an easy one. So you're talking about possibly a summary of performance. It's going to be different for each school. So that becomes very specific in terms of what information you have on hand and what information the school really wants. So there could be a discrepancy if all the student has is an IEP. You can ask, is there some flexibility with that? Sometimes there's not. Sometimes there's, unless it's really basic stuff, sometimes there's not a lot of flexibility with that. Sometimes you can send in the evaluation. Typically, it's the psychoeducational evaluation that a student was on. And sometimes that's within the last 4 years, let's say. It could be five, depending on the school. And it could be rather specific in terms of what the school is asking for. Each school can ask for different documentation and different things for each disability, and they can ask for different things school to school based on the same disability. So learning disabilities at school A might require certain things, and school B might require certain things as well. So that's where your homework comes in. And after you send in the documentation and you work out whatever issues or discrepancies are there, and seeing if there's any flexibility, then usually there's an interview, and that's where the student gets to describe what their experience is with their disability. What do they need? Why do they need it? And how do they need it? So that's all the information that typically will come out. Students with learning disabilities have a really hard time with that one. And for whatever reason, I'm not really sure exactly why the reason is, but students with learning disabilities have a hard time with that interview. Sometimes it's like asking, you know, what's it like for you to have brown hair? I have no idea how to answer that question, to be quite honest. So teasing out the information sometimes is a little more drawn out. It runs the risk of, if a student can't describe things or why they need certain things, this goes back to the advocacy piece. You can't advocate from a place of being somewhat ignorant. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean you just don't know. And I found that students have the information. It's just not well formulated. They just haven't really thought about it very well. And sometimes we can rely on the parent. Sometimes that's the case. A parent can come into that process or be part of that process in a certain way. Preparing for that interview is probably the best thing for your own advocacy because everything else stems from that. If you know what you have and you know how to describe it, you know what your deficits are, you know where your strengths are, you know what you need and why, that is across the board. So when we're talking about services, if you have a need for, I'm having a bad semester because certain life things happen. Life happens. It just does. But if you know, hey, I need to talk to somebody, okay, well, there's probably a counseling services office at the school, so you can go and talk to them. So advocacy really is built into, hopefully is built into the process. So if you get to talk to the accessibility staff, and you can say that stuff out loud, and you're comfortable saying it out loud, you're probably comfortable asking for a tutor. You're probably comfortable going to your professor and talking about certain things that, you know, that you didn't understand in class. You're probably comfortable even sending an email. You're probably comfortable, you know, asking, I don't know where this service is, but do you have it? and if you do, where do I find it? So those things happen, but the process to request is just you send in some information, you send in some documentation, you talk to the accessibility staff, and then afterwards there's more questions. So there's sort of like, that's sort of like process one, B, and then, you know, you get the next phase. The next phase is once you get the accommodations, what do you do with them? And that's a whole process. That's different from school to school. So that goes back to the tour. So, hey, if I do get accommodations, what's the process here? So it might be for one school, they hand you the physical letter in your hand or they send it to you by an email and they say, hey, it's up to you to turn them in. I'm not turning nothing in. This is up to you. And that might not necessarily be exactly what that student needs. Or they may not be as comfortable with that piece of advocacy. So they may choose a school that has a different process that can help out with that. That might be key for a student with a particular presentation of their disability where they might forget a lot. Or they may not be comfortable doing that piece individually. And so they may choose something of a different school, and you have to tease all of that out when you're doing that interview, and do the interview as soon as possible, because you may have to look at those particular nuances of how am I going to get the accommodations? What do I need to do? Where do I need to go? If you're on a large campus, like Penn State is a ginormous campus, it takes you 20 minutes just to get halfway across campus. Like, it's a huge thing. So the problem with that is if you have a class that's like 35 minutes away across campus and you have to take a test, scheduling is one thing, but how are you going to get there and it's all clear way all the way across campus? That's problematic for some people. So you have to really look and do your homework about all of these particular nuanced things, but you have to ask, where do I take my tests? How do I schedule those? Who do I schedule those with? Are they here or are they in a separate building? Could be in a completely separate building, like I said, 20 minutes away across campus. What happens with my accommodations? What happens if I have a problem with them? All those things should be questions to ask the disability staff as soon as the interview is over, and they're like, hey, we have this set of accommodations. Great, cool. How do I use them? What do I do for this? So you may have books in an alternate format that you use with a text-to-speech thing for your textbooks. But what's the process for that? There's a whole separate process for that. It just doesn't magically happen. And so students need to ask those questions right off the bat. And that may mean the difference between going to one school versus another school. So school choice is going to be an ongoing, evolving thing. And sometimes you can use one school. If you pick, like, I have a list of four schools and I got into one and I really don't care about it. Great. Go through the accommodations process anyway. You may pick that one first, just as practice. Awesome. You may find the experience to be something that's eye-opening and that may help you on with the other ones that you do care about and help prepare you for the other ones that you're doing. And it may change your mind. It may change your mind completely. So, long answer.
No, that's perfect.
I think that was really, really great. And even as you're talking, I'm going through like the different schools that I used to work at and dialing into like the different processes that we had, because like you said before, some universities where I used to work, they would give the student the accommodation. They had to hand that paper to the professor. And I remember having one student, I could kind of tell, like, I think he was bashful in giving it to the professor. And also I think for the particular thing he wanted to get, we had technology where you could go to a lab and then you could hear the questions for the quiz. So that way you could have more time too. I think he was probably uncomfortable leaving the classroom to go do that as well. So when you're talking about that, those interview processes that you're having with accessibilities, if that's not something you're comfortable with and that's how the school operates, that's good to know, because maybe they might want to look to another school that maybe another school says we send the paperwork, or you would still somehow, or classes or exams are always done from home. So no one's not together. So no one knows if you're going to the lab or so those are really, really interesting like nuggets that you spoke about. And I'm trying to think too, we always tell students, you know, when it comes to trying to pick a college, be proactive. Don't just wait till senior year. And when would you recommend that students, if they have different learning disabilities, to start doing the college search? Because even when we were talking, and there's also that interview component for accessibilities, I'm like, huh, maybe beneficial if they start even looking like end of sophomore year, if they do early acceptance in like end of junior year or something, then they could really do interviews with each college they're accepted into and then like maybe break it down there. But do you have like a good timeline for that?
You know, the typical timeline is like junior year, you start thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And you really should start earlier. So I think in high school, it's freshman year, they start looking at what course do you want to do? Do you want to do post-secondary training or do you want to do some post-secondary educational thing? And so as soon as that happens, that's probably the starting gun for both the student and the parent to start transitioning. So that's the transition plan for high school. So that's where it begins. So the parent, one, has to prepare to start transitioning out of being an advocate and start pushing the student to be more of an advocate. I agree with you when you said the sophomore year. It's exactly what I was thinking. So freshman year might be a little more, they might be a little more immature at that point. Sophomore year is a good point to start looking at some of the basics. And if you're looking at what school does, what does it offer? You don't even have to look at a major. It doesn't matter about that at that point. So, and pretty much for most of us, it's changed anyway. So, honestly, it changes for most people. So that process of change is really good because you don't really have an idea. And then your mind changes. Okay, that's totally okay. But sophomore year is a great time because there's no pressure. There's no pressure at all. All it is a learning experience of looking at a school, going on a tour. What does that feel like? What are you basically looking for in a school? What interests you or not? Is it the color of the buildings? Is it something that's more a modern versus something on the East Coast where you have a lot of, you know, brick and mortar and you have a lot of stone buildings that look ancient and all that kind of stuff? Yeah. Like those types of things. Like, where do you really resonate with you? And that environment is really important, especially for somebody with a learning difference. Environment can be everything. So if you pick an environment that your sophomore year, you're like, wow, I really like this environment versus this other one. I really didn't like this one. That one seemed a little too cramped, a little too old. It's stuffy, and I don't feel good with that. Okay, great. Why would you choose a school that has that feeling for you? That's a great start. But if you're also adding on the things that we said with the tour and you start asking questions, could just be a simple thing. You start with one office. You start with the academic resources. Okay, here's what I have in high school. Here's what I can access really easily. I can go to somebody. How do I do that here? What do I have to do? Well, most likely it's going to be students have to initiate that themselves. Who? Where do I go? Do I come to you or is there a front desk that I have to go to? What's the process? Do I have to email somebody? That simple kind of questioning for one office can be the same questions you ask for other offices as well. But you might start with one just as a simple way to get your feet wet. And you can do this. I encourage if you're going to do that in sophomore year, it should be I do as a parent. Then we do, then you do. So if you're doing that sophomore year, pick three schools. Random. Just do it. It's kicks and giggles, man. And parent will ask the questions, and then student will ask the questions at the next one, or we will ask the questions. We'll just have a list, and we'll kind of do that. We'll pick a different office we can ask to meet. And then the third one, guess what? You start doing it. And then junior year starts, the rubber meets the road, let's say. You start really looking at which school is going to provide me with the best experience, but also the best services for what I need. And that becomes a whole process for both parent and student to start really collaboratively looking at that, and really having conversations that are different than just, hey, what do you think? Hey, that was nice. You know, like, that's just sort of the surface. You want to get below that. You want to start looking at the things we talked about in terms of what services are there, how are they, what do they have, how do you access them, are there limitations to that, those types of things. How far away is it? You know, you might have a comorbidity. There's a lot of comorbidities between learning disabilities and mental health. A lot of it. I think upwards of like 25 to 40%, depending on the research, depending on the statistic you're looking at and who's reporting it. That's a lot. So if you're looking at that, there's not just accessibility. Now you have to look at mental health issues as well. And that can complicate things a little bit. And I always tell people, you probably go to the school you need to be at versus the one you want. And if you can combine the two, gold. But you're not going to know unless you really walk that walk. But you may have to pare back what you want based on what you need. Mm-hmm. So that's always the overarching thing that I, as a parent, am like, okay, if you have a mental health issue and you need medication and you're on medication, why are you choosing a school that's 1,500 miles away?
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense to me whatsoever. Unless the services are at that school that you absolutely know you can get exactly what you need on a regular basis. So you might want to go 1,500 miles away, but you can't access the stuff that you need 1,500 miles away.
Right.
So that's the tough choice. It's a tough pill to swallow, but it's one that means the difference between you being successful in college and actually doing something in college, and graduating from a college and having a degree that you want versus not having any of that.
Mm-hmm.
Spot on.
It is. It really is. This is good. I'm learning a lot. I'm learning a lot from this interview so far. I was going to ask, because you mentioned a lot about, and I work at a community college, so of course we get a lot of traditional students, but I work with a lot of adult students as well.
Yeah.
But for students and parents, so for, you know, student that's 18, 19, 20, and working with their parent with their disability as well. Like, so you mentioned, like, the self-advocacy part is like a huge thing that I think any of us, no matter university, community, college, would encourage. So, you know, we see students and their parents, like, I sit down with a parent and the student, and I'm like, okay, how can I help you today? And the parent starts talking, and I'm like, you know, I try to be respectful, but I may say, oh, do you mind if I have the student speak? Because that's, you know, I'm here to talk to you. They're the ones in the seat. So, you know, I guess I would call that a helicopter parent a little bit. And they're out there for sure. How would you give advice to a parent that is just very concerned about their student and they're kind of doing everything for the student? And, you know, our whole thing is we want you to advocate for yourself, because in your classrooms, when you get to the workplace, you know, your parents aren't going to be there with you. So what would your advice be to parents that are just like concerned, or even the student that doesn't know how to talk to their parent about, like, can I try to do this by myself, or, you know, try to do this with your help, but on my own as well?
Yeah, that's a great question. Great question. And just a suggestion, how I started those conversations was, hey, I'm glad that you're both here. I would talk to the parent and say, hey, I'm going to be talking to the student primarily, if that's okay. It doesn't mean to any disrespect, but I'm going to do that because they're the ones who have the information. I will ask you questions. If we get stuck, definitely chime in. So if they miss something or whatever, chime in. So that was always respectful, I think, of the parent, but also emphasizing the fact that the student is the one who has that. So if, in fact, there is that helicopter parent, typically that's coming from a really good spot. It's coming from a spot of concern, and I want my kid to have everything that they're supposed to have. Well, there's only one way to do that, and to make sure that that's the case. But you're missing the piece of the student. What do they want? They may not want half the things that you want. Okay. Well, if there's a discrepancy, you're not going to know that unless the parent, one, has to start pulling back. And so if the student is able to, like sophomore year, this is a great way of starting to sort of pare that back. So if we do that college tour suggestion on sophomore year, that's a great way of the parents starting to pull back and starting to say, what do you need? What works for you? What doesn't work for you? Asking your child those questions, not just assuming you know, but asking that student exactly what that works for them, what doesn't work for them, what accommodations do you enjoy using, which ones are the most pain in the butt for you to actually use. Why? Is it because it's hard to access? Is it because you don't like the program that they're using? If you're using some accessibility programs or whatever, you're using text-to-speech, and you're like, I just don't like it. I like the one on my computer better. Okay, is that a preference, or is that just you don't have training? Or what classes do you actually enjoy doing? Mm-hmm. Like those types of questions, you gather that information. So the parents need to understand that if your student is going to be successful, you cannot be there for them, with them. That's just not going to happen. And they have to be able to walk that walk and talk that talk entirely on their own. So if you have that information and parents have that information, you need to start imparting that to your child. You need to start making sure that you, at the IEP meetings, they're speaking up about these things. What works for them, what doesn't work for them. At 14, you should not be at an IEP meeting for the first time and like be like, what is all of this? You guys have been meeting for how long? Like, what's the name of this stuff? Like, I don't even know. Right. Like, what? Wait a second. How often do you guys do this? Like, you should not be shocked at all. This stuff needs to happen over time, periodically. And so that lessens the shock for the parent.
Right.
Because after graduation, IDEA and 504 stop at that point. Those subsections just stop. IDEA stops. Well, the parent needs, like, that's an abrupt stop. That's an abrupt stop. Like, we're not squealing the brakes here. We're not pounding on them. You know, so that just leads to things that are not so great. So if the parent can go and figure out a way for them to deal with their own anxiety, because look, this is a you issue. Mm-hmm. And if that's something that you can deal with in a way that you can even ask the school officials in high school, how do I start backing off some of this stuff to make sure that my son or daughter is ready to be able to self-advocate in a way that's okay, even in the young adult way, which is, I haven't made a doctor's appointment on my own. Well, that's a good way of actually making sure that they can. Okay, that's an independence thing. Maybe you're still doing their laundry. Probably time to stop. Maybe they don't know some things about cooking. Well, maybe it's time to have them cook a meal once a month or once a week, starting in their sophomore year. Right? And maybe that's a good idea. These independent living skills are just as important for their own advocacy, for their own independence, for their own sense of self-efficacy. I know that if I have an issue, I know how to make that doctor's appointment because I saw my mom do it or my dad do it. Then I did it together with them to make sure that everything was okay. I went and picked up my own antibiotics at the pharmacy, that kind of stuff. So it's not the first time you've done these things. So that allows the parent to have some confidence that, hey, if I do send my son or daughter 1,500 miles away and they do get sick, they're going to go to the Health and Wellness Center because we went on that tour and we saw them. We talked to them. We individually went to that place just to see what it was all about. And you see how that leads to a little more confidence. You're never going to feel, look, dropping my kids off at college was probably the most stressful thing. I was absolutely beside myself. I had no idea that I was even going to have that. And I'm like, how are these parents like acting this way? Like, I was always shocked. Like, it was always, and then I put myself in those shoes. I'm like, okay, I get it now. I totally get it now. What helps with that anxiety is, one, knowing the campus, knowing the services, doing that background stuff, but also knowing that you've done the work with your son or daughter to make sure that they can be independent and speak up. There's going to be roommate problems, let's say. There's going to be all kinds of different things
always
that come up. There's going to be different things. Are they able to know who to go to, what to say it, how to deal with those things in a way that makes sense for them? again, every child's different. Every situation is going to be different. But for them, do they have enough? Have you done the prep work, let's say? And that kind of takes some of that helicoptering away, especially if you're preparing for that interview with the accessibility staff. Mm-hmm. They have to know the stuff that you know. They have to know that information. They have to know what you know about their disability that you've been studying for the longest period of time. They have to know, like as a parent, you have to lead the way. You have to start finding out about college accessibility law and college accessibility processes and all that kind of stuff, if in fact that's going to be one of the things that they're going to ask for. And that helps a student be informed and make an informed decision. That's all it is. And if you can make an informed decision, even if it's no, well, you chose a school, you chose not to, okay, but you still have done the prep work, you still have done that stuff on the tour, you still know the process, you still have done all of that, and now you know what to do if you get in trouble, and you kind of feel that you need to get the accommodations at that point too. So all of that works out for problem solving. It's less stress. Oh my God, so much less stress if you're prepared for all of that. And that makes the difference between being successful your first semester, even your first year, or not and dropping out. So the more prep work you can do and the more that student feels that sense of efficacy, sense of autonomy, I can not just drive a car on my own now, I can actually do my own laundry, I can balance my checkbook, I can do all kinds of different things, you know, independently, still with the parent being that backup person to say, hey, just like I did with my son, you don't have to wait for the accommodations thing for next year. Just go to them and ask. Like, right. That's something you can do right now. You don't have to wait. So it's more of that I became a coach. I became somebody that's pushing from behind rather than leading from the front. So that's how I envision that. So for parents being more of a helicopter, yeah, you got to land that ship, man. You got to land that ship and get out of the driver's seat and start teaching somebody else how to navigate that stuff. So that's the best advice I can give.
And that was awesome.
Yeah, that was great. I think that was just great information for students that have learning disabilities and don't have learning disabilities, because I think when it comes to self-advocacy, like all of us working in higher education, like the long-term goal for the person is we want them to be sustainable. We want them to get out of here, be independent. They're going to go into the workforce. So we see that in the future. And we kind of see, and it goes back again, like we know the parents, obviously they love their child and they want to make sure everything's okay. But it's like, there has to be, I like how you said it perfectly, the coach from behind. And it's like, I'm guiding you, but I'm behind. You have to kind of start taking that step ahead, because that's how you can start utilizing that advocacy muscle and learning how to navigate things on your own. So I think that was just so well put.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
And I was gonna say, it's like something I heard too. What you were saying is for the student, you know, if you have a learning disability, to know what the disability is. I feel like, you know, a lot of people may say like, "Oh, I have this, I have that," and there's different limitations to that. That in your head, you may feel in your body like what your limitations are. But going back to what you were saying about the interview part, like how do those limitations like manifest themselves, or do you even know like what disability is? So, you know, for, you know, the parent sitting down with their child to say like this, you know, and the doctor too, whoever, you know, has diagnosed them, like making sure that they understand what it actually is that they have, so they know how to, again, advocate themselves. I was talking to some coworkers the other day and just talking about, and this is general, like how some students just don't know how to like assess, they don't assess themselves from semester to semester. It's like, if I failed this semester, you know, and oftentimes they'll explain something happened or a personal event happened, or sometimes they're just like, I slacked off. It's like, okay, well, that's a good assessment. But like, have you actually sat down and reflected on that and to say like, how am I going to do better the next semester? And I think that's for anyone. If you have a learning disability, if you don't, just making sure that you are reflecting on your success or failures as well. To say, okay, this class, you know, I used speech to text and it really helped, but maybe in like a more like a hands-on, like a science class, this helped. You know, I think we all, and these are things that I'm thinking about for myself that I just didn't do in college. I was just like floating along, and I was like, okay, I'm going to the next class, and it's the next semester. But lot of what you said. I'm like, yeah, a lot of it is just, it's really researching colleges, the environment, and also just really knowing yourself and how you are as a student.
Correct. And that process is never going to change. Mm-hmm. That process of learning about yourself is never going to change.
Right.
It's not like, oh, you know, I'm 18. I learned everything I need to know about myself. And now you're 38. You're like, yeah. Oh, wait a second. No. That changes. That changes dramatically over time. So that process of being self-aware of what I want, what I need, how I am, what I'm doing, my interests and all that, it's going to change. And that process is an ongoing thing. I always thought it was going to stop. Like, that was my downfall. I was like, no, I learned very quickly that that's not the case. Mm-hmm. So, and that was a hard moment for me to learn, but it was a lesson that was very well ingrained. I'm like, okay, you know, it's going to change. My life is going to change. My needs are going to change. My body's going to change. All these different things are going to change. What I need now, I'm not the same person I was at 25 at all. Mm-hmm. So, and a person who's 18 is not going to be the same person at 22. And you want them to succeed, but you want to give them the process by which that's capable of happening. And it can't happen if you're just, well, floating through. And I floated through a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I floated a lot. So that hit with me. And I was like, really? Yeah, I probably should have assessed. I probably should have done certain things. And I just didn't. So all the things that I'm trying to tell to students are things that either I screwed up on or I see other students not doing. And it's a process by which learning what works for you. I just worked with a student the other day that I had seen in counseling probably off and on for like 4 years. They're still learning what works for them. So, and they finally figured out one piece and they're like, wow, this is so helpful for me right now. And I'm like, wow, I'm glad you finally did. Like, that's a really important thing. And she's like, yeah, I wish I knew that beforehand. I'm like, yeah, but no. We don't do that. We don't do that here. We don't, hindsight's 20/20, but we don't judge ourselves for any of that stuff. You found it and it was the right time for it. And this is the right time for that to happen. That's all. Mm-hmm. You don't beat yourself up for what you didn't know at the time when you didn't know it.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Any other questions?
Okay.
Yeah, this was just so great. I think I really hope that people out there, especially parents that have like children who have learning disabilities, hear this. I think it was just so great. So many points that you gave today. I think a couple of things just really resonated with me. I think even one that really was loud for me was the slogan you used was, it's accommodations, not modifications. What was that term you used?
Yeah. Accommodations, not modifications. Modifications aren't a thing that we do. We don't modify. We can modify some things, but that's like, we're not modifying the questions for the test. Like, oh, I just get multiple choice questions. Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. We can go ahead, like if somebody's low vision at the same time as they have a learning disability, we can make the font bigger. We can make only a certain number of questions per page, let's say. We can do that. That's definitely something we can do. But that's not modifying the content.
Right.
And I think that's so key too, because I think that'll be so helpful for people when they're doing their research, doing kind of that timeline you suggested of like the research and looking at schools, asking different questions. Because I think I've also run into that in the past too, where I've had someone think like you can modify, and it's like, you can't really modify, because then that becomes an issue for everybody else in the class. Something's offered in an online format, or if something's offered in person, or there's only so much you can do with the like curriculum itself. But here's how we can help you, like you were saying before, if it comes to, if someone can't see, we can try to get the font better for you at the same for those questions. So I think that was just such a helpful piece, and people can use that when they're beginning their college search and trying to navigate and point to what's going to be the best decision for them. Even said a bunch of other things that maybe people haven't even thought about accessing their medication. And I was thinking, well, what if I was a student freshman year? I went to college outside of state. I went to North Carolina, which was a couple of states over. I didn't have a car. So if I had medication, I wouldn't have thought about that in my processes of understanding what college I wanted to choose. So I think you really did a great job of giving people a lot of things to think about. And do you want to just shout out your website, some of your resources? So if anybody wants to look for more information, they can connect with that.
Yeah, sure. like you said early on, we found each other on Instagram. So Accessing College is what my business is called. So it's Accessing College. Same thing on Instagram, Facebook, accessingcollege.com. Resources that I have. So I have two freebies, actually. I have two freebies, if I can say them. And it goes directly in terms of what we just talked about. So one is navigating the process. So it's just a checklist. Did I actually do the things that are necessary for me to get the accommodation? So it walks you right through that process. It also gives you the questions to ask on the back end once you get that interview done. The other one was the college tour. So there's a planner that I put together that's just a printable that people can go ahead and download. So all the services that we were talking about, that's all the stuff that's on there. And, you know, they can use it over and over again based on each school. And so that's there too. So website has a blog with all the most of the information that I imparted today, but probably more in depth. Certainly the podcast is something that people can listen to as well to get more information. And if you follow me on Instagram and Facebook, you find all the other stuff that I do as well. So, but those are kind of some of the basics, and you know, I get the basics down. So one, people are prepared. You have the information that you need to have in order to make an informed decision, but also wellness oriented. It's very holistic. So I'm trying not to miss the mental health piece as well, so that students know what causes less stress or what causes more stress to happen, so they can make the best decision for themselves. So that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dan, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm sitting here like, wow, I'm taking notes because I've learned so much. Even just sitting, like, I sit not too far from disability services at my college, and I wasn't aware of all like the little nuances or things that students really be doing to prepare, because I send them down there and I'm like, well, just go talk to them. But I feel like now I could, yeah, I can maybe sell that office a little bit differently because you taught us so much today. So thank you so much for being here with us. We really appreciate your time and your advice. So yeah, everyone, thank you so much for joining us. We know this is an amazing episode. If you have a disability or not, I feel like you picked up a lot of nuggets from this. So thank you so much for listening, everyone. You know where to find us on social media, on TikTok and Instagram. It is Yawson Podcast. So make sure to follow us there. Share it with your friends. If you want to send us an email, we're always going to tell you. We don't get emails from people. If you want to email us, please feel free. We're waiting. So you can email us at yawsonpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And thank you so much again for supporting us. We really appreciate it. And we'll see you next time. See you.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening to the latest episode of Your Advisors Will See You Now. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media pages and check out our website. Take a look at the show notes below.
And please make sure to subscribe and share this podcast. Also, show us some love and please leave a 5-star review. Catch you next time.
See ya.